Now playing in Los Angeles, exquisite food and drink, world-class art everywhere, spectacular sports, dazzling Hollywood attractions. L.A. offers the full variety of food scene, from game-changing taco trucks to 35 Michelin stars. And did you know that Los Angeles has more museums and theaters than New York City? Get your fix in music, film, comedy, and world-class museums. Plus, get behind the scenes in movie magic with a world-famous studio tour. That's something that should be on everyone's bucket list. Start here with discoverla.com. When you hear that Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, you're probably thinking, what's the catch? Well, there isn't one. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans for just $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Our producer, Sean, is a big Mint Mobile guy. Here's what he had to say.
For a fraction of the cost, Mint Mobile proved to have excellent coverage with no drop calls or unsent texts. Plus, they make it super easy for me to activate my device just by following a few simple steps online. And bam, done. It was great.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/literally. That's mintmobile.com/literally. And cut your wireless bills to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/literally. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Hello!
There he is. Oh, look at this. I put a collar on. I didn't need to put it on.
I know. Look at you.
They said there's going to be a snapshot at the end. And then my vanity was like, oh, I better put on a shirt with a collar.
Oh, don't think I don't have vanity, bro. I've got, I mean, I'm up with like my wife's mascara, like trying to get rid of the gray.
Exactly. During Corona, all the gray's coming in everywhere.
My favorite part about all of this is seeing what celebrities just go, fuck it.
Yep. I haven't had much experience with it, but I
know. Why am I talking about hair? I'm a terrible interviewer.
What if we did that? What if we talk about hair for the full hour?
You can see why I'm bad at this. I'm like, okay, your guest has no hair. Open up with hair talk.
Let's talk about hair.
This is going to be so fun today. Oh, by the way, I'm Rob Lowe, in case you didn't know. And you're listening to Literally with Rob Lowe. Or is it Rob Lowe Literally? You'd think at this point I'd know the title of my own podcast, and you'd be wrong. I hope you guys are having as much fun listening to the podcast as I am doing them. I knew they would be, that I might have fun. I had no idea that I would have as much fun as I've been having. And if you're enjoying it, if you could do me a favor, I'd love it if you would go over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review the show. Because that is really how the word is spread and helps the algorithm and people hear about us. And then we become a thing. And then I retire from acting. And then you don't ever see me again. What you're going to do is you're going to go to Apple Podcast and tell them you love the show. I would really appreciate it. Anyway, this is going to be great. Keegan-Michael Key, come on. Funny sports freak. I mean, Mad TV, Key and Peele, talk about revolutionary and beyond genius. But most importantly, Don Meagle's husband on Parks and Recreation. I think that deserves the spotlight shined on it. And the dude is starring with Meryl Streep right now in Ryan Murphy's new movie, Prom. And he's making me feel really inferior. Oh, and by the way, we've recorded this episode back in, I believe it was the middle of May. So there's a great story that we share about the amazing Joel Schumacher, who directed St. Elmo's Fire. And in the interim, Joel passed away. So I'm dedicating this podcast to Joel. And it's so funny that he was on our minds even before he departed us. So that's why we don't talk about him passing away, because he hadn't passed yet. But you're going to love this. Let's have a chat with this guy.
I used to have quite a lot of hair, very fine hair, but I was a kid of the 80s. So I grew up, I was trying to rock that El DeBarge Prince look, that, like the Purple Rain look. And I had, I had cans and cans and cans of mousse to get some lift, but I didn't have any thickness. No thickness. It was very fine hair. So I could get it to go out. I had that look. I was rocking that look for about 3 years. Remember Stoney Jackson, the actor Stoney Jackson?
Do I remember Stoney Jackson?
Remember my man?
My man Stoney Jackson dropped 43 points in a celebrity basketball tournament that I played in. He was a baller.
43 points?
Yeah. Stoney was nuts.
In those celebrity games, very often 43 is the high score for one of the teams.
I know.
That's amazing. I had no idea. And he was a karate guy too, right?
Yeah. God, it's so great that you bring him up. God, he was the best.
I loved that guy. He was on, what was the show called, Rob? Profilers? The Protectors? There was a TV show he's on ABC for like a season and a half.
That's right.
It was him. And I think it was the guy who was like the bad guy. Oh, I'm going straight 80s here. Who was the bad guy in Dead Zone, that Christopher Walken, Stephen King movie. There was a guy in that movie. He and Stoney Jackson were stars of this show. It was at the same time that Stoney Jackson did not City on Fire, Michael Paré and Diane Lane.
Oh, Streets of Fire.
Streets of Fire and Willem Dafoe.
That's now it's all becoming clear to me. And I'm remembering why Stoney would have been in sort of our orbit at that time, because Streets of Fire was shooting at the same time as St. Elmo's Fire, Back to the Future. We were all on the backlot together. We were all at the Universal backlot.
Universal. Oh, you guys shot, did you guys shoot all of those street scenes on the backlot?
Yes.
Like the apartments and Demi's apartment and everything?
The
Universal backlot.
The apartment still exists, that fire escape. My favorite, Demi trying to commit suicide by air conditioner.
By air conditioner.
You know, as people do.
especially when you really, if you really hate yourself, you know, with that slow, lingering death, right? Exactly.
That's on Warner Brothers, but all the bar stuff exteriors was Universal, and they had tented Universal in because they didn't want to, Walter Hill did not want to shoot night shoots on Streets of Fire, which is all nights. So the entire backlot was tented.
For Walter.
Yeah.
Interesting. Oh, that's fascinating. Wait a minute. Who directed St. Elmo's Fire?
Joel Schumacher.
Oh my gosh. Yep. Now, if we think about him now, you think it's not his typical bill of fare. But that's different that you did that kind of a personal, grounded human story like St. Elmo's
Fire. I got one for you. Do you know what Joel Schumacher's movie before it was?
No, I know I don't.
And I know this is going to be right in your wheelhouse. DC Cab.
Mr. T.
Come on.
DC Cab. Joel Schumacher did DC Cab and Batman and Robin.
In fairness, he may have just written it.
Oh, he may have just written it. Okay. Somebody's doing the research.
I know he either wrote it or directed it.
He wrote, but the fact, to me, the fact that would be in his orbit at all of like his oeuvre, clearly he took a big shift in the mid 90s, you know.
Oh yeah, well I love Joel. Joel was always so funny.
Directed by Joel. Devin says written and directed by Joel Schumacher. DC Cab. Well done. Good. That's a deep dive, Rob.
Well, I auditioned for it and didn't get it.
We never forget those. You never forget that you didn't get, right? Yeah.
No. That role went to Gary Busey.
Oh, right. Gary Busey, Mr. T. Who else is in that movie? You know, because it was Gutenberg time.
Oh, but when is it not?
Yeah, it's always Gutenberg time. Wait a minute, was it? 3:09 p.m. Pacific. Gutenberg time.
Yeah.
It wasn't him, but there's a guy in the movie who's like a Gutenberg archetype, Gutenberg prototype. but I can't remember. I can't remember who
Zach
it was.
Zach Galligan?
Is it Zach Galligan? Maybe it's Zach Galligan from Kremlins.
I think it might be Zach Galligan.
Guys, look at Rob Lowe. I think it's Zach Galligan. I'm going to stay on my manners, and I'm not going to Google it.
Listen, I'm
not going to Google it.
I only remember the actors of whom I hid in their girlfriends' closets when they came home from work. That's the only way I...
Brian Dennehy.
Oh, yes. William Devane.
William Devane. Martin Cove.
Burt Young.
Oh, my God. Burt Young.
Burgess Meredith.
All those. Yeah. Ray Walston. All this.
I worked with Ray Walston. I mean, Mr. Hand, among other things.
Yes.
And I worked with him on Stephen King's The Stand.
Which, by the way,
people should watch that right now. I mean, since we're going
through
this.
Very apropos at this very moment. Yes, exactly.
And it's very dated, but it's also really, really good. And it's a really weird, cool cast. But Ray was in it, and I was just in awe of him. And my favorite thing was that he loved to take all of the food and the silverware off the catering truck every day and take it back to his hotel.
Like, he couldn't get flatware at the hotel.
I know.
Like, he could make, and maybe even better quality flatware. Yeah,
listen, you don't survive as long as Ray Walston in this business without stealing a lot of silverware.
You got to steal some cutlery. Why are you even doing this? Why are you even in this industry?
No, right? It's really true. In the 80s, so Prince, did you ever get to know Prince? Did you ever have any dealings with him?
I never got to meet him. And the funny thing is, we both grew up in the Midwest. I'm from Michigan. And you're from Ohio, which I think of as the proper Midwest, but also the gateway to the East.
Yes, 100%.
Right? Because if you're getting over to Youngstown and you're getting toward Pennsylvania, that's the East to me.
100%.
If you ask an Iowan or a Nebraskan or a Missourian, Michiganders and Wisconsinites and
they're not Midwest.
We're not Midwest. We're the North.
Oh, no.
The North. Yes.
100%.
So Illinois, Indiana, they all look at us and go, no, that's the North. That's the North.
Yep.
But he's from, you know, he was from Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And I always thought he must be, and to this day is still, the coolest person from Minneapolis. He's the coolest American that ever lived.
But Hang on. Walter fucking Mondale.
Oh, that's true. Walter Mondale.
Come on.
Walter Mondale. That's right.
I mean,
Mondale Ferraro. I mean, you can't get past that. No, that's okay. I stand.
When I think of like funky, cool, iconic, fashion forward, I'm going maybe with Walter Mondale.
I'm going Mondale. Those ties with those jackets.
I know.
You're right.
That guy,
he was on the vanguard of fashion. And I also think for me, it was my formative years, but I think that was my favorite Prince era. The kind of Sgt. Pepper's jackets and the lace. I liked that better than Dirty Mind and Controversy. I got that kind of, he was doing, because he was coming, you know, he was in a way, like, to me, a bit of a black urban Bowie.
For sure.
So he had that androgynous thing going on. And then Sign of the Times and all that stuff. I love all that stuff. But that Purple Rain era was so... It was just fecund with creativity and potential of what he would be, and the different varied types of genres of music he played on that one album, and the way he and his work were masterpieces during that time.
One of the things I always like to remember, because it speaks so much about people's perception and staying your course in this business and being true to your art, was I saw him open for the Rolling Stones.
Wow.
At the LA Coliseum. It would have been 1981. So he just would have had I Want to Be Your Lover on the radio, probably, mm-hmm. right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And it was George Thorogood, Prince, Rolling Stones. And he got booed off the stage, Prince.
Did he really?
100%.
Oh my gosh.
It's one of those memories where I look back. You ever have memories you look back on and I go, no, you must have misperceived that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You're experiencing the Mandela effect right now. Cause that didn't happen. You're going, there's no way that happened.
People were throwing things.
Oh.
And it wasn't because he was bad. It was like that for that demo, time, it was, people were like, he, and I remember he was uber androgynous on this one. Like it was fishnets, high heels. Mm-hmm, it was like uber androgynous Prince.
Right. He was wearing the bustier. It's with the, exactly. Right.
And people were not
having it. They were not having it. In LA, no less.
In LA.
But you're right. The demographic is different.
George Thorogood's demographic.
Closer to the Stones.
I drink alone, bow doo doo, bow doo doo, by Jack Daniels and Jim Daniels,
whatever the fuck that song is.
He's got George Thorogood. I always wonder, did he go through a similar regimen as Tom Waits to get that voice? You know what I mean?
Oh,
you know what I mean?
I know. Did they just smoke their lives away?
Exactly, because that's how do you just talk like that regularly? How's that your regular voice? You wake up in the morning and go to bed, and that's still your voice. That's something else.
I like people who have acting voices. Do you know people like that who are like, you meet particularly young up and coming actors and they talk like we're talking right now. Like,
yeah.
Are you ready for me on the set? Okay, great. What time's lunch going to be? Great. Okay. Okay. And ready and action.
I'm not going to do that.
It's like,
yeah, the Christian Bale effect,
Yes.
Effect. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I heard Morgan Freeman on a director's commentary one time for Million Dollar Baby. And he was saying that he actually was putting gravel into his voice for all the narrative stuff, for all the voiceover. And I'm like, you're putting gravel into your voice? Oh, I did not know. I always thought the guy was talented. I'm like, oh, so that's a choice. You're doing that. I just thought that was naturally how he talked. But he even said he has a VO. There was an atmosphere, a mood that he wanted to give to all the VO he was doing. And he kind of said, in a manner of speaking, he was impersonating Clint.
Wow.
So he was trying to do his own thing and impersonate Clint and do this hybrid voice. That was a little different than, you know, the voice when he's just standing there being the trainer, you know, which is a different feel. It has a little more antenna, he's got this little more tenor to his voice. You know, that's the thing people go, oh, it sounds like Morgan, you know, because he's got more antenna than you think.
So good.
You know,
I could listen to you do impersonations all fucking day long.
Oh, that's sweet.
I love all your impersonations. There's something about impersonations that I just, I don't know. It's like seeing a dolphin in nature or hearing a baby's laugh. It just releases a pheromone.
Isn't that funny? I can do the former and I can't do the latter. What does that say about me? But I thought that, you know, it was fun when I was on Mad TV. I always I worked really hard at trying to find, for me, doing impersonations is very much usually it's trying to find an amalgam of two voices and or finding whatever that neat vocal habit is.
Yes.
You know what? Before I tell you that, I'm going to tell you something else. I'm not sure if this is true. I heard this secondhand. So. Danny Glover. I can do a Danny Glover impression. And this is a story about, my Danny Glover story is, I know a guy, Morgan Freeman was making a show recently talking about his films. And so Danny was going,
you brothers are funny.
So Morgan Freeman told a story on the show that he was doing that when Danny Glover had seen Shawshank Redemption and had come to him to tell him how much he enjoyed Shawshank Redemption. And he walks up to Morgan and he goes,
Morgan, I gotta tell you, man, I just saw that movie last week. You were so good in the Shrimp Shrimp production.
I'm sorry, the Shrimp Shrimp? You're telling me I'm in the Shrimp Shrimp production?
You were so good in the Shrimp Shrimp production.
Shrimp Shrimp reduction. It's okay.
Shrimp.
And Morgan, the Shrimp Shrimp reduction. I was not aware that I did two movies last year. I did.
Oh my God, that's the...
Shrimp Shrimp reduction.
And then this is Janet Jordan Peele's Danny Glover.
Riggs. No. Riggs. There's a bomb on my dick.
That's shit. That's like the fact that he could get
you got a tattoo like Popeye. You got a tattoo like Popeye.
He says Popeye 74 times in 3 seconds to the little boy because he's trying to see if someone has a tattoo like Martin Riggs' tattoo.
Wait, tattoo. Like Popeye.
I'm going to go back. Oh, my God. I'm going to go back and look at that.
You'll love it. It's like, mwah.
I worked with Danny on, well, first of all, I used to do, when I was younger, I was really, 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 really deep political active. And I was on that circuit with all those guys. And,
Yeah,
we were all just to the left of Che Guevara. And then years later, I worked with him on Brothers and Sisters, and he was playing Sally Field's love interest.
I love it.
Who also was my campaign manager as I was like running for president or whatever I was doing. He took 3 hours to get from his trailer to the set, but he left when they said leave.
Really?
He wasn't like...
Oh, he wasn't holding up in the trailer. He was definitely...
Oh, no.
He's definitely making his way to set.
He's a total pro.
Yeah.
But he's the fucking Tin Man. he literally...
Pre-oil.
Is like...
Pre-oil.
He is a very stiff human.
Oh, yeah. He's kind of, the mobility is a factor.
There's not a lot of mobility, yeah. And he's in great shape. Like, he looks like $1 billion.
And still, you're saying, Brothers and Sisters, and that's fit 10
five years?
Years
ago?
Five years ago? Years ago? Yeah.
5 years ago.
But, so.
He also eats everything on the
does
set.
He really?
Like, so the Brothers and Sisters was totally predicated on us eating all the time. I hated it. It was like, I signed up for a show where I got to run for president. I ended up on a show where all I did was bake waffles with Sally Field.
Right.
Anyway, so he would eat, you know, food on a set, as you know, it's supposed to be there for 18 hours. Sometimes you stop, you don't even finish the scene, and you walk away and you come back the next day, it's the same food.
Oh no. Oh yes.
But
yes.
No,
you're picking
Danny,
up the scene the next, yes.
Danny didn't, I guess that he must have never eaten in his previous movies.
I guess not, yeah. So he would just dig in.
Oh, he ate everything?
Just dig in.
Prop food, your prop food, he'd eat off your plate, and then it would be like he would go to like the one of the little PAs goes, yeah. Hot dogs. Oh, there's a hot dog craft service.
Rob.
And they would bring him chili dog. Oh, I'm sorry, it was chili dog.
Chili
that
dogs.
Was his
chili
big
dogs.
Thing.
Oh, that's that. Okay, you just made the story quantum better. But
that was.
Let me do it. Let me get one of them chili pops.
That's amazing. You're like, I'm sorry, Mr. Glover, chili pops?
Get a side of Coca-Cola.
A Coca-Cola, Mr. Great.
Oh, by the way, and I'll get into that, but my last Danny thing, he's very similar to the actor Edward James Olmos, who I've also worked with.
Yeah, I love Eddie. I work with Eddie too, yeah.
Fucking best.
The best.
First of all, they're great actors. They're great.
Full of integrity.
Mm-hmm. Full of integrity. But he's also the kind of guy that will like hold up production while he's on the phone talking to a third world dictator.
Yeah, right. Guys, I'll be there in a second. I'm with Maduro. Yeah, exactly.
100%. Like 100%
talking to Maduro. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so he's
Belater es contras. Sandinistas.
Yeah, that's all you hear. It's clearly a movie from 19. Oh, it just popped in. Another great I can do. Another great.
Yes.
The one and only Billy Dee Williams. Ugh. Billy Dee Williams did Key and Peele, and it was a fun little concept too. We did a sketch where we're hanging at the laundromat. I'm an old uncle. I'm like a Danny Glover type of character. My nephew is over here at the laundromat with me. I was like, hey man, what's going on? And he's the uncle. I'm sorry. He's the uncle. I'm the nephew. We played so many uncles and nephews and brothers and sisters and you know. So he was the uncle, and he's like, hey, man, what's going on, Nate? And I was like, hey, not much, Uncle Darnell. And he's like,
man, you know, everything's popping off right here at the laundromat. And I was like, and so he's trying to make the laundromat the barber shop in the African-American community.
Yes,
and so,
exactly.
Eventually, I'm trying to be a good nephew and stick around with my uncle. And it's just the doldrums. It's abjectly depressing. And then across the street is a barbershop. And the guys are having the time of their lives. And at one point in time, I'm like talking to my uncle. I'm like, hey, it's going to be okay, Uncle Darnell. Holy shit, that's Lando. And I see Billy D. Williams across the street. So while we're shooting, so that's the sketch. So while we're shooting, I'm coming out of my trailer one day and Billy's driving up. He's driving up in his S-Class, very tasteful black Mercedes. And
not too much, not too little.
Nice car, a luxury vehicle, but not too soupy, not too snazzy. Mm-hmm. Gets out of his car, black linen shirt, loose black linen pants, loafers with the weaving in them, right? You know, like, and a beautiful collared scarf. We're talking about a 2 to 3.5 inch thickness, right? Just a nice
cravat.
A cravat, if you will, loosely tied. Mm-hmm. Devil may care. And he's walking out and he's like, how's it going? And our base camp PA goes, Mr. Williams, it's a pleasure to meet you. My name is Elliot. So your trailer will be over here. And we just wanted to know if you brought any wardrobe with you. Billy just turns and looks at Elliot and goes, you're looking at it. And then just walks away and just goes, you're looking at it. And I mean, he's the best. But then he had a very hard out. And sometimes I'm wishy-washy, Rob. Like, I'll have a hard out and then I just turn into a marshmallow. You know, I give them another 10.
I know. You know what it is? It's the Midwestern people pleaser.
Midwestern people pleaser.
No, I'm not kidding.
You know.
100% the Midwestern.
I know. It's in our DNA. It's so hard to overcome. And so Billy had an out. He had a hard out. And we were in the shop. We're in the barber shop. And there, unfortunately, there was a clock, a very prominent clock in the barber shop. And so Billy would just keep looking at the clock. And Peter was at Video Village, about 25 yards away, right? And the door is open, so Peter could hear us talking in there. And Billy just turns, he looks at the clock, and he's like, "Pete, I don't know what to tell you, buddy, but I gotta go." Pete. And he's like, "What, Pete, what time is it?" He goes, "Billy, it's about 1:20. Oh, man. Hard out. 1:30. I gotta go. I gotta go. Hey, and then we're like, "Pete, we're almost there. Like, one more setup." Billy, and he goes, "All right, sounds good." And he turned to me and go, "It's that freeway right there. Is that the 1:10 or the 10? Because I gotta..." He's like, "I gotta make my way to Santa Monica. Gotta be there at 2:15 p.m. Oh, Pete!
Gotta go!
I gotta go! I mean, but that velvet, you know, oh my God. You know you're a baller when you just, hey, you walk out of your car in your clothes, you get on the van in your clothes, you get on set in your clothes, you shoot in your clothes, and you go home in your clothes. There's no
fitting. Dude, that's the Adam Sandler made a career out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Shopping for humans is hard. Shopping for your dog is easy, thanks to Bark. Every month, we deliver toys and treats just for your pup. They deserve to be spoiled every month. At Bark, we send your dog a whole collection of toys and treats made just for them every single month. Whether it's our fun plush toys or our ultra-tough toys from Super Chewer, we give your dog exactly what they want. And for a limited time, we will double your first box for free. To get your free upgrade, go to BarkBox.com/Rob. BarkBox is so convenient and delivers straight to your door and, more importantly, right to your dog. I can't wait to try out BarkBox. My dogs need their toys, particularly the chewable toys. Sign up now at BarkBox.com/Rob for an exclusive offer. This ad is now over. Let's get back to petting our dogs. Hey, listeners. Ever have trouble getting someone on the phone when you have a question about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Thanks to Quince, I can get high-end, versatile pieces at fantastic prices. They've got killer luxury essentials that are perfect for my wardrobe. Quince has all the must-haves, like Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweaters from $50, iconic 100% leather jackets, and versatile flow knit activewear. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of middlemen and passes that savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. One of my producers tried Quince, and here's what he had to say.
I'm really excited to revamp my closet with Quince. There are so many great options at pretty unbeatable prices. I'm really excited to try out the burgundy cashmere crew neck. I love the blue chore jacket. Maybe I'll throw some joggers in there. These are great options at pretty unbeatable prices.
Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/rob for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince, quince.com/rob to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rob.
By the way, so Billy D. Williams, can we just take a minute to give it up for Brian's song?
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
I mean, I have a theory that of a certain demographic, the first time you cried as a male was watching Brian's song.
Always. You said as a male, for me, it would have been, you know, reruns on a movie. So it would have been my formative years. But that's when you certainly don't want to cry.
Yes. I'm a little older than you. And when that movie came on with Brian's song with James Caan.
James Caan. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and it
God.
Just, those movies open you up. Okay, now I'm going to confess. I'm going to confess. It's not because I'm a Lions fan, but I'm going to confess anyway. As big a sports fan as I am, as much as I love a tearjerker, I'm going to admit it right here on the podcast. I've never seen Brian's song.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I've never seen it. I said,
oh, no.
I'm not afraid. I know who I am.
Look.
I'm going to say it. I've missed that one.
Look. I know it's a movie about the Chicago Bears, so you're going to have to hold your nose.
It's hard for me. Mm-hmm.
I understand. I understand. But I am telling you, if you do nothing else with your life.
I have to see that movie. I got
to
see that movie.
You have to see that movie, those two in that movie. It's really dated and really funny. It's a great look at what football was like. Like you and I'm a big football guy like you, and to look back on what it's, you know, Coach Hallis and the whole, awesome.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, because he was still alive and coaching at that time. That's right. That Papa Bear was still there.
And how do you survive as a Lions fan? How do you live with yourself?
You know what I mean? Here's the thing. I am by nature an optimistic person. Mm-hmm. So innately. So that's really the only way. The funny thing is, I'm a glutton for punishment. For the longest time in my life, my mother's from Illinois. My grandfather was a White Sox fan, but I liked the Cubs, and I wanted to root for the Cubs. My grandfather would watch the Cubs games and the White Sox games. So I was a Cubs fan and a Lions fan. Cubs gave me hope. And of course, I'm a Tigers fan, but I feel like I'm allowed to have an AL team. And an NL team. I'm allowed to have my hometown team, an American League team. I'm also allowed to have a National League team. Now, you're from Ohio.
From Dayton.
You're Dayton. So are you a Bengals fan?
Here's what's interesting.
Yeah.
Hell fucking no.
Uh-huh. Okay.
To that.
Okay.
Although with Joe Burrow going there, who I met, he's awesome. I ran into him.
He's a good kid?
He's a great kid.
Yeah.
Got his head on straight. He's awesome. And he does legitimately look like a young Tom Brady. We'll see, obviously.
No, we'll see. Yeah, definitely his strides and his dropbacks, he looks like Brady. Yeah, similar mechanics to Brady, and it seems like a similar temperament to Brady. But if you're from Dayton, do you typically root for the Browns or for the Bengals? Dayton's a little...
It's in the middle, I know. Here's what's weird. In the era I grew up there, would have been, when I was born in 64 and I lived there until 70, late 75. So we were...
Brian Sipe?
He was just after.
Just after you left, okay.
And I liked Brian Sipe. We were Steelers fans.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you think about it, Pittsburgh is not that far away.
Not that far.
And I was Lynn Swann with the breakaway jersey. With my Nerf football? Come on, man.
Oh, me too. Lynn Swann was my hero. Here's the thing. I went to the NFL Honors. My wife and I went to the NFL Honors. So I hosted the NFL Honors about 3 years ago. And my wife was the...
By the way, that show's great. It's great. I presented 1 year. I don't remember. It's such a great evening.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a great... It's like being in a candy shop. So my wife, Elle, was the head writer. So we got to work with all of the... She put the program together, and we're both football fans. I've married a football fan. She's a Giants fan.
Smart man. Smart.
And makes life so much easier. So much easier.
But doesn't
she,
it?
She's there in the couch next to me. And I just looked at her longingly. I'm like, I love you so much. You're watching the draft. She's like, watch the draft. I told you to come in here and watch the 23rd overall picks happening. So, and she's just tech. And also she's tech. We have become good friends with with certain players and people who work on certain organizations. So we can text like the president of the Lions and stuff like that, which is really great. It's great to know those people and be involved in that community in that way. But here's the thing. I'm trying to answer your question, Rob. If I cheated and I said, oh, forget it, I'm going to go root for an AFC team or a different, I have other NFC teams that I root for, I have friends on. But I'm a Lions fan through and through because let's say I'm 66 years old and the Lions go to the Super Bowl. I want to be able to be one of those guys who has that story that I've been a fan since Billy Sims played for them when he was rookie of the year in the league in 1980. Yeah. And that I've been watching since Jeff Chandler, Billy Sims, Eric Hipple to this day. And that the losing is almost... It's almost delicious if they ever get to the promised land.
Okay, so then you can answer this question. Why did, and this is awful because he's one of the most famous running backs of all time, and I'm drawing a blank.
Barry Sanders.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Suddenly retire with when he was, because here's what I heard. I heard he retired because he respected Walter Payton so much that he didn't want to break his record. That has to be bullshit.
I call bullshit on that.
Me too, but you've heard it. Have you heard the same thing?
I've heard that story. I think it's apocryphal and not true.
Right.
I mean, it's definitely apocryphal, but it's not true.
Yeah.
And I feel like even though, and the reason here's how I think the story got perpetuated. Because he is such a mild-mannered and soft-spoken person, that somehow someone feels that means he's not competitive. He's an extremely competitive person. I've been at football games with him. And in his own way, there's this fierceness that simmers underneath that you used to see in the cuts and the moves. I also believe that there was a bit of a toxic environment in the Detroit Lions organization at that time. Mm. And that environment no longer exists. Some players were frozen out and were not asked. They're not treated like alum. And now the culture that's there now with Rod Wood and Bob Quinn, the general manager, and I love Coach Patricia. He's a smart, smart, smart guy.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant guy. They're trying to bring all the older players back into the fold. They want them to feel like they have the opportunity to mentor. The two best players the Lions have had in the last 30 years both left after nine seasons when they were still in their prime. Calvin and Barry. And both mild-mannered guys. So that, to me, tells me there's some small culture issue. And they're addressing that right now, which I'm thrilled about. Absolutely.
That's so great. Yeah, because I mean, it's a great franchise. And you'd love to see them do it. Maybe the Bengals will be the same. The Bungles, as we call them.
The Bungles, right. It's so funny that I only noticed right now that you were surrounded by a triangle of three AFC teams.
Yeah.
So you root for the Steelers, but then the Bengals are there and the Browns, all AFC teams. And the same thing, it's in my area, it's a battery of NFC teams because Detroit and Chicago are about 5 hours away from each other by car. And it's funny how those it happens regionally like that.
How did you, so just a quick sidebar. So the I got turned on to the whole, the East-West Bowl stuff by my buddy, Chris Pratt. We were working on Parks and Rec, and we got to talk about that in a minute too.
Yes, yes, yes.
And Pratt was laughing his ass off, just screaming on his phone. I go, what is this? He goes, you got to see this. And so he showed me probably the first iteration of it. What is your favorite crazy real NFL name?
I think hands down, I'm going to give you one, and then I'm going to give you an honorable mention.
By the way, the fact that you have a hands down one has me so excited.
I have a hands down, and I have a second, but that's based purely on nostalgia, because the second person, his name is a favorite of mine and dear to my heart because he's the reason we wrote the sketch. So, number one, a former Cleveland Brown, Barkevious Mingo.
Ugh.
I think Barkevious Mingo is a masterpiece of a name.
Ugh.
And by the way, he has a brother who I don't know if he played in the league or not, but his name is Hugtavious Mingo. Hugtavious. Hugtavious Mingo and Barkevious Mingo. Now, the honorable mention, the runner-up, is, of course, DeBrickashaw Ferguson. First of all, if your first name is Jim or Bob and your last name's Ferguson, just Ferguson is already spicy. In the normal name world, spicy enough. DeBrickashaw? Amazing.
That is so... Okay, my favorite for sure.
Yes.
He's so famous now that the name is almost... You forget how insane it is.
Right.
Plaxico Burress.
Of course. Plaxico Burress.
Plaxico.
Plaxico, which could it could be two things. It's like bad dentistry in Mexico.
Yes.
Or it sounds like, it in a way, sounds as if he could be the name of a company that sells like high-end plastics.
Yeah, or it's actually, he's plastic himself. Like I thought... Is it one of those things where like mom was like, you know what? My son is going to be a badass. He is going to ruckus people in the NFL. He's going to be tough as shit and a warrior. And he's going to be made of gnarly Plaxico.
Right, and they're not going to like Plaxico. It sounds like an essential tough element, right?
It's Area 51 shit.
It's Area 51 shit. Oh.
It's what you put in the mystery flying wing. It's actually.
Exactly. It's like, oh, guys, we have a 2.6 on the Plaxico meter.
Are you down to clown with the coldest to ever do it?
The coldest to ever do it?
Oh!
Wait a second.
He's a high school senior who's going to LSU, I believe, this next year.
The coldest.
Check it out. Read it.
Now I understand. I'm reading. Oh, it's D-E accent mark, C-O-L-D-E-S-T. My man's first name is the coldest.
I mean,
that's amazing. I think it should just jump to the top of the list for me. The coldest is my shit. The coldest to ever do it. Hi, I'm too cold. I gotta go. Okay,
I gotta go. You're looking at it.
Here's the toughest one. Here's some pressure. What was my girl thinking when she named her son Peerless Price? Wide receiver for the Buffalo Bills. You can't, so Plaxico, that's inspiring.
Here's my thing on that. She's got the alliteration going,
mm-hmm.
which is not common.
That's
There's
true.
There's not a lot of alliteration in these
you're
names.
You're right. Actually, they usually try to go divergent with sounds.
Yes.
So I think the alliteration is pleasing to the ear. And peerless is actually a nice word. I like
yes,
word. But what the connotation? Now, there's two ways to look at it. The positive way is to say he's going to be peerless. We're naming him peerless, and the other connotation is you'd better be peerless.
You know, see, I get it's a baller move. I get
you get baller move. Yeah,
like if you want to draft him,
Yeah.
Then the price will be peerless.
His name should be Peerless Priceless. Right.
Peerless Price Point.
Peerless Price Point, yeah. Peerless Price Hike. Oh, I got another one. So when I was at home in Detroit, a friend of mine told me a story years ago. That's my favorite story. A guy, her brother was moving into a building in Detroit, and he had a hard time getting this chair up the stairs. And this older African-American gentleman came out and helped him with the chair to get it into his apartment. And he said, oh, God, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate it. And he said, hey, man, anytime you need some help, I'm here for you, man. You just call me Bominicious. And this guy's name was Kevin. And he was like, oh, okay. It's a pleasure to meet you, Bominicious. And he lived in this apartment for 3 years. And he saw, you know, Bominicious every day. And then when he finally moved out of the apartment, he said, hey, Kevin, man, let me ask you a question, man. You moving out. And it was good having you as a neighbor. I was glad to meet you, get to know you a little bit, but I have a question for you, bro. You live in this building 3 years. Every time you see me, you call me Bominicious. Now, what the hell is that all about? He said, the first day we met, that's what you told me to call you. He said, no, boy, I told you to call me by my initials. I just want someone to hear the story. And one day name their child Bominicious Ferguson.
That's a quarterback. That's a quarterback
that's
name.
That is an SEC quarterback name.
100%.
SEC quarterback name. That guy goes to Mississippi State.
Bominicious.
Yeah. Bominicious Ferguson. 3 touchdowns of the day. Career day.
And we'll be right back after this.
Join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak, On 34th, Elemis, and more. Plus, to help bring more parks to more people, Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project, transforming vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help ensure healthy, livable communities for generations to come. Donate online or in-store. And learn more at Macy's.com/purpose.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. I know that for me, people are out, people are about, people want to do stuff, and we want to do it, but it can be a grind. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapist at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/RobLowe today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/RobLowe.
I love fast cars, but there aren't a ton of high-performance EVs. They're certainly out there. But when I get a chance to get behind the wheel of one, I love it. And I was blown away by the Kia EV6 GT. When you get behind the wheel of the Kia, it is literally like being in a state-of-the-art rocket ship, but also comfortable. The thing goes from 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. It is the premium driving experience. And of course, it's an EV. So the climate thanks you. SiriusXM provides access to over 165 channels in the vehicle. Music, sports, news, comedy, yacht rock. Let's go. Little Steely Dan going in your Kia. Come on now. So check it out today. It is the all-electric Kia EV6 GT. I had a blast checking it out. Believe me, you should do it yourself via kia.com/EV6 to learn more. That is kia.com/EV6. Kia, movement that inspires.
Now I have to ask you a question about language and pronunciation of words. Did you learn First of all, I don't know if he was Cantonese or Mandarin. What language were you speaking in Wayne's World?
It's, that is actually Cantonese. It's not Mandarin. It's Cantonese.
Did you learn it? Did you learn it phonetically?
Or I did. I learned it. I learned it phonetically. I had a tape that I had to listen to.
Yeah.
And I to this day sometimes, you know, people who speak Cantonese will stop me on the street and hit me with Cantonese. I'm like,
you're like, I
can order cream of some young guy. I can do that.
That's the top of my skill list. I love Mike Myers so much. I love Mike Myers. I just thought it was great, and I just think that he's wonderful. I just think that he's wonderful, and I love that they worked with him. You did two movies together.
When we the first time they previewed Wayne's World.
Yeah.
When he said "cream of some young guy," they laughed so hard and so long they had to go back and recut the movie. That's what's, you know, it's really interesting about movies today. I wonder, because in the day where comedies were movies, and you really only saw them in movie theaters.
That's
and
right.
Maybe a year later it would be on, you know, Showtime or HBO. And
right.
This is not that far away. I mean, Wayne's World is in this era I'm talking about.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
You would literally have to cut pauses for the audience to laugh.
That's right. Like it's interesting. They used to do that. You know, we were texting with Mike yesterday, and Mike and I have actually had, and we're good friends, and we were having that conversation about classic movies. And the Marx Brothers film Animal Crackers was mm-hmm. was a show that they had done. They, you know, they'd strung a plot together for the movie, but it was a show they had done on Broadway. So it was a review in a way, or a vaudeville
right.
review.
Right.
And because they had honed it so well, they cut pauses into that movie all over the place because they knew exactly where the laugh lines were and the duration of the laughs, because they had done the stage show for those bits, those routines, for a couple of years on Broadway. And I think it's fascinating that you don't see that anymore. The Nutty Professor, the remake, the Tom Shadyac remake with Eddie Murphy. In the first dinner scene, you have to go back and see the movie. I don't care how much pausing they put in that. You have to see that movie in the movie theater twice. At least. There's no way around it. Too much rolling laughter. Too much rolling laughter. It's just...
Yeah, the rolling laughter. If you watch next time Wayne's World is on TV,
yeah,
just notice that moment. And literally he says, "I'll have the cream of some young guy." And then it cuts to like Dana just nodding.
One thousand, two thousand, three thousand, four.
Like, what the fuck? Jesus.
And it's interesting. I'm going to look out for that now, because they covered it organically with Garth laughing at it.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Sniggering at it. Right. Yeah, exactly.
100%. But like, you don't, we consume things so rarely just in theaters anymore. I wonder if people are still taking that into account, like a crowd's rolling laughter as opposed to three people sitting in a living room.
Yeah, I know. I think that part, I mean, we would show all of our sketches. We would screen all of our sketches at our interstitial tapings. We would do 2 days or 3 days of interstitial tapings for Key and Peele and for the first two seasons. And it was always helpful. But then that crowd was already so young. And that's 6 years ago, 7 years ago. That crowd watching the show is already, you know, anchored to these phones.
Sure.
So that you're going, we took a lot of pride in programming and curating the order of the sketches and where the interstitials would come in and how they came out and what we would start with, what was the lead in, what's the credential scene, what's going to be the blow. We did all that work. And I always, still to this day, I wonder if it's helpful. In this era, I wonder if it's right. helpful. A sketch show like SNL in 1975, as opposed to a sketch show like SNL now, or Upright Citizens Brigade, those shows, I still wonder. I mean, they were always crafting it for the role.
Right.
And now
rolling
I don't know
laughter.
That we it's so much more fractured now. I don't know that we need to do it.
What? Tell me about Parks and Recreation. We missed each other because I think you came in the
season.
I know,
we didn't see each other.
I think you came in the last, Ann Perkins and I had moved to Michigan. You must have been happy about that.
Yes, always. Always yes. Happy when a character moved to Michigan.
Yes.
I had the time of my life. And I love Retta. I just love Retta, first, because I did all my scenes with her. I played her husband. And And it's fun to be around. It's always fun to be around Amy. Amy's actually a very big inspiration to me. I just mentioned up at Citizens Brigade, her colleague, Ian Roberts, was one of our showrunners on Key & Peele. And of such a lovely, friendly set, but it's one of those sets that you know is because that group has spent so much time together. And I remember the day, first of all, I loved the Moho, the fact that people would stay in that motorhome. I thought that was such a great.
The Moho is unbelievable. So folks listening, it's traditional on these shows, on any show, every actor has their own place to stay. And if you're a young actor, you might be packed into three little mini apartments called a Winnebago or whatever. But as you get to be a lead in a TV series, you have your own motorhome.
Your own trailer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But on Parks and Rec, we had the Moho, and that was one trailer, and we all shared it.
And it was great. It was such a great idea to have that community, have everybody yep. be there together like that. And I remember Aubrey and I having such a good time improvising on set. I do this often sometimes, and maybe more often than I should, where when you cut, I won't come out of character. I'll play a character in the scene. And then if I start a nice improv groove with somebody, I'll play a character when they say cut with that person. And I remember Aubrey Plaza was my acting coach, and she also happened to be in the show I got hired on. So she was like the desperate acting coach who could never get a real gig.
Amazing. That's amazing.
So we had our own little storyline that we were only doing for us. And it was me and Aubrey. And so, they say action and we do the scene and it was cut. And she's like, okay, not exactly what I was looking for. Listen, what the director's telling you, I would take more as guidelines than anything else.
Great.
We'd just go back and forth. And it was so great. It was so much fun. But that set engendered that kind of imagination and fun.
We were just staying in the Moho. I remember my favorite Moho set thing was, there was a moment when you have to Google it because it's so good. Brad Pitt did a much reviled Gucci ad. Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm. I remember.
Where he's like talking gibberish. And yep. it was before Matthew McConaughey stole that whole raison d'etre for commercials. And
yeah, exactly.
And so we recreated it. We wrote it. We reshot it. We did the whole, I played Pitt, of course.
Right.
And we shot that in the Moho, and that's what we did on our time off. We were making fun of people and shooting stupid fake commercials.
You shot it in the Moho. I love it. I absolutely love it. And
I think Aziz came up with because the lighting is so weird in it. If you watch it, Aziz came up with a flashlight and a water bottle that if you crinkled the water bottle, it put these sparkles on my face. It was
amazing.
Like, yeah,
that's absolutely amazing.
I know Pratt has it on his phone. It's one of those things that, like, I gotta figure out a way to steal it. This is where I need the Russians to collude.
I might be able to help.
That's
you with
Chris
the Pratt.
Stuff I want off the internet.
I will make that me and my wife's mission, that we will get that video from Pratt.
Will you do that?
I think I might have an in.
He loves you, as you know. He's a massive fan.
And we are massive fans of him. I just adore him and his But I know his mother-in-law, so I know, and as do you,
Yeah, yes, of course.
How do you know Maria? How do you know Maria?
Our kids are contemporaries of one another.
I see. The
Schwarzenegger Shrivers are like the Lowe's second family, and vice versa.
Speaking of engendering things, that family does that. That family at large does that. They're very good about, we have lots of friends within the family, and they treat you so beautifully, and they're just the loveliest people. Yeah.
Tell me, okay, I've got to hear about the Ryan Murphy movie about prom.
Oh,
dude, wow. You got to spill the beanolas.
First of all, it was given his work, given his oeuvre of work. As precise and as beautiful as everything was, I was expecting actually a more controlled, kind of regimented set. But it wasn't. It wasn't. No. It was so loose and so free. And Ryan loves a Steadicam. He loves a Steadicam.
Oh, he does.
Because he likes to keep everything kind of open and free. What am I supposed to even say? It's Meryl Streep. It's Meryl Streep.
You're working with Meryl Streep. Okay.
Her love interest.
Walk me through the minute you lay eyes on her for the first time. You're like, holy shit.
Okay. First of all, I was lucky enough to have been at the premiere of the second season of Pretty Little Lies. So she was there. And Elle, I remember Elle, she kind of just squeezed my forearm. She goes, there's Meryl. And I was like, okay. And she's like, just slow down, breathe. So took deep breath. And then I just walked over to Meryl and she was talking to a couple. And then she had finished with the couple. And then you kind of, you know, do the thing when you're at those parties, with those after parties, yep. You just kind of have to put hands on shoulders.
Yes.
And so I, and then she turned around. And then she just looked at me and she just goes, okay. No, here he is. And it was, my spirit left my body, went to heaven, yes. And then came back down. And she was just as gracious as she could be, showed us the picture of her brand new grandson. And then she said this, which I almost guess like I expected Meryl to say, and she's like, this is my brand new grandson. And she's showing us a picture on the phone, and her son-in-law is Isik. So he's probably like a shade darker than me. And he goes, look at this. Isn't that great? Isn't he gorgeous? God, finally some little bit of color in this family. Exactly what Meryl would say. And the only other time, she was so gracious, and she's got this great deep cackly belly laugh. James Corden is on the set. So James Corden's got, for, you know, Corden's like a story machine. So he'll, yes. it's at any point in time, you're either watching people huddled around Corden and then mm-hmm. there's an eruption of laughter. You give it like 2 minutes and there's an eruption mm-hmm. of laughter, or you're in the group of people around Corden and he tells always the most interesting stories. And you just hear Meryl just go, ha!
Just really quickly, Danny Glover ordering something with Meryl Streep.
Because what it would be is he would go, Meryl, knock. Who's there, Danny? Big one, Sammy. I don't. Big one, Sammy. What, Danny? Big one, Sammy. Big, Popeye. And she just does a lot. She does a lot of this. She does a lot of Meryl Streep does a lot of this. She goes. She smacks her knee.
She's literally smacks her knee like she's in the Country Bear Jamboree.
She's just you know, brassy and there and earthy as stately and as graceful as she is. What really gets me about Meryl is how available she is emotionally. And that's something that means that she has held on to that child in her, that the child part of her gets relinquished and it comes out. And that's what everything that we see, that magic that we see, is her having, after so many decades, never letting go of that child in her heart. Because I'll see her, Meryl Streep, you'll see her on the 6th, 7th take, right? And a very technical shot, because Ryan wants the shots to be gorgeous and on this really technical shot. And she's just right there as present and emotionally available as she was on the first take, because she's playing, she's having fun. And she's been doing this her whole career. And she tells you the best stories. I was talking to her about The Deer Hunter. She said I was doing a run of Anton Chekhov's The Seagull, and she said she was playing the nurse, and she said, and I, any opportunity I had to fall down or do a pratfall anywhere, I did it. And De Niro came and saw it with the producers, and she goes, and you know, Bob doesn't, you know, you've met Bob, he's quiet, but he's always listening, always present to kind of what's going on in the machinations of everything.
Yeah.
And she said, the reason he hired me is he could see, she said he could see I was a show off. which meant that he knew enough to look beyond that to know that I'm extrapolating this, that she had enough courage to hang with heavyweights like John and Chris Walken and Bob. Like, it's Bob De Niro. Are you going to be able to handle it, or are you going to crumble under the pressure? And he could tell by her performance that she wants to be there. She
right.
Meryl Streep's a wide receiver. Meryl Streep is Jerry Rice.
She'll go across the middle.
She'll go across the middle, and she wants the ball. And it's
no one goes across the middle like Meryl Streep.
Not like
nobody.
Nobody goes across the middle like Meryl Streep. Yeah, just it was fantastic. But her, Corden, Nicole Kidman, and a bunch of really great young actors. It's going to be magical. It's going to be fun and dazzling and heartfelt. I'm really, really looking forward to it.
I cannot wait. I mean, Ryan's one of my favorite people, and I want to play Ryan.
Yeah, someday. Play Ryan in a movie. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So good. This was so fun. I'm so glad that you came on. I've been such a fan, and everybody told me I would love you. And it's they're like, no, you don't need to do any notes. You don't need to prep anything about him. You're going to love each other. And indeed, it's like, I think we could talk for five hours.
We could talk for 5 hours. No, this is wonderful. Thank you so much. Oh, I did want to say, I'm always supposed to say hello from Fred Savage.
Oh.
Always supposed to say hello from Fred.
Frederick J. Savage. I love that boy.
He's the best. I thought of Fred because when I see you, I think of Fred. And Fred taught me your memorization technique.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. And Elle and I produce a TV show on National Geographic called Brain Games.
Yes.
And it's all about how the brain works and why it works. It's on Disney Plus right now. There's my plug.
Very well done.
And there's a guy named Nelson Dulles from Miami, Florida, and he is a four-time U.S. memory champion. Like, uses all different parts of memorization in memory. And he has a YouTube channel where you can subscribe, and he gives you memorization tips. And one of his tips was that technique that Fred taught me, that he learned from you, about the writing down the first letter of every single word of the speech.
Yeah, so what it is, for if anyone out there is interested, if you have a speech to give or something like that, you, instead of writing the speech, you write only the first letter of every word. But you include punctuation.
Which I thought was fascinating.
And so there's something about, as you're writing it, you're already reducing it down to a letter instead of a word. Mm-hmm. And then when you study it to learn it, you are only looking at this sort of this new version. You never look back at the original unless you absolutely have to. And it 100% reduces your memorization time at least by half, at least. And
yeah, because you have to, you have to rely on your memory. Because the word, the letter now becomes a symbol for not only the word, but the concept.
Yes.
It's fascinating.
That's right. Yeah. I actually have to give credit where credit is due. I learned that from Allison Janney on the West Wing.
You learned it from, I knew you learned on the West Wing. Yeah. From Allison. Yeah. Speaking of memory, tipping a memory, I have a show actually that is premiering on May 20th called Game On CBS. So it's going to be taking the place of Survivor. When Survivor's done. Whoa. Yeah, so I know we get the 8 p.m. slot on Wednesday. And it's so if anybody wants to know, it's a great show. It's a fun show. Anybody can watch, and it's sports oriented. So it's a panel show. I'm hosting it. Venus Williams is on it. Rob Gronkowski is on it. Bobby Lee is on it. And the guy who's the head writer for Late Night with James Corden, his name's Ian Carmel. Funny guy. And we have celebrity guest comedians and celebrity guest athletes. So like Ronda Rousey's been on the show. Terrell Owens has been on the show. And then you have people like Ken Jeong and Kevin Nealon. Big Poppy was on the show. It's really great.
Big Poppy.
Yeah, Big Poppy.
Hey,
yeah.
Key, you know who you need to get on that show, of course.
Who's that? Rob Lowe.
The coldest.
We got to get the coldest on the show.
If you don't get the coldest on that show.
That's the best. This has been the best. This is a wonderful way to spend some time. Thank you. Thank you, Rolo.
Oh, my face hurts from smiling and laughing. I mean, he is, what a lovely man. And just that energy, just even coming off of the computer and the microphone, overwhelmingly fun and positive and awesome. I'm going to now spend the rest of my day thinking of more names for NFL players. I know you are. Come on. Because you are the coldest. You, my dear listener, are the coldest to ever listen. Thank you, and I will see you next time on Literally with me, Rob Lowe.
You have been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe. Produced and engineered by me, Devin Torrey Bryant. Executive produced by Rob Lowe for Low Profile. Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco. And Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Stitcher. The supervising producer is Aaron Blaert. Talent producer, Jennifer Samples. Please rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts. And remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.